Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the You've Got a Friend in Me edition, as we have the unique opportunity to listen in to the start of a friendship between the Bengals' new left tackle, Orlando Brown Jr., and the NFL's all-time best left tackle, Anthony Munoz. Plus, a little contract talk from Joe Burrow and T. Higgins. The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Kettering Health, the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. With more than 120 care facilities and 1,500 care providers, Kettering Health is committed to guiding you to your best health. Visit KetteringHealth.org to learn more. Now, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since Joe Burrow's comfort in his own skin. As you almost certainly know by now, Joe Burrow showed up for practice this week wearing a headband, and it created quite the social media stir. In fact, I want to invest in a headband company. I suspect every kid in Cincinnati is going to be wearing one soon. But in all seriousness, it's one of the things I admire most about the Bengals quarterback. He is totally comfortable in his own skin. Whether it's wearing unusual clothing as he walks into the stadium or expressing his opinion on issues that he finds important, Joe trusts his instincts. There's a lesson there for all of us. Speaking of Burrow, he met with reporters on Tuesday for the first time since the AFC Championship game and naturally was asked about his contract negotiations.
You know, I'm involved. That's, you know, it's in the works. That's not really something that I like to play out in the media. That's something just the way I think they want to do business, I want to do business. We prefer to keep that between us.
His matter-of-fact way of discussing it certainly makes it appear that Joe expects a deal to get done this offseason, much like the contract extensions given to Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson. It's obviously the number one offseason objective for the Bengals, but they would also like to extend T. Higgins and Logan Wilson this year and Ja'Marr Chase next year. Burrow is well aware of how his deal could impact the ability to retain others.
You know, whenever you have guys on the team that need to be paid, that's always on your mind. You want that to be a focal point, and so we're working to make that happen.
I feel very confident in saying that a Burrow extension is not a matter of if, but when. The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Bengals Picks and Ultimate Bengals. They're free to play with tickets and signed merchandise up for grabs. Find both inside the Bengals app. The most recent collective bargaining agreement between NFL owners and players splits off-season activities into three phases, and the Bengals began phase two this week. Phase one is basically limited to working out and holding meetings. In phase two, the players start doing some limited football activities. It's still voluntary for veterans at this point, but nearly all of the Bengals' key players were in attendance, including Higgins. T discussed his presence and his contract negotiations with reporters.
See, a lot of guys that are in contract situations like yours may not be in something like this. Why is it important for you to be here?
To be honest with you, I'm here to get work in, man. At the end of the day, I love the game. You know, whatever happens when my contract happens, you know, I'm not worried about that right now. But hopefully we can get something done soon. But right now, I'm just here to work.
I mean, Joe talked about whenever he's going through negotiations, he's keeping you and Ja'Marr in line for next year. What's it like when your quarterback is saying, putting his kind of his money where his mouth is?
Man, he just tells everybody he want to keep his weapons around, you know. And you know, hopefully we can do that and, you know, keep building from here.
I mean, is that something that y'all talk about a ton? I mean, how much do y'all kind of as a trio talk about it because y'all are the ones?
Obviously, we talk about staying together, you know, for the long run. And hopefully we can do that. And hopefully we can get something, you know, negotiated to where you can keep all three of us.
How involved are you?
I'm just here, you know, doing my thing, working out. I let them do what they need to do, you know what I'm saying? So
you try not to worry about it, keep it out of your head then?
Yeah, I just keep my head clear, not trying to worry about, you know, the contract stuff and just trying to better my game, so.
Is that hard though?
I mean, not really, because at the end of the day, I'm here to play football. Well, obviously, I want to make money, but at the end of the day, I'm here to play the game I love.
See, I know a lot of people in your position wouldn't come to the off-season program. This happens a lot in the league. Why did you want to be here?
I mean, I love the game, man. You know, I wanted to come in and work. I mean, and I live here in Cincinnati. Why not be here and work out, you know what I'm saying, for free? So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just here to get my work in.
For you, is there a message in that, too, of like, hey, I'm here? Like,
not necessarily. I mean, people can put it that way. At the end of the day, I'm here for me. And, you know, I'm going to get my body in the best shape to play at the highest level come game time.
Some people in their camp say, don't do that. Was there anybody that recommended you, hey, don't go? Or you were just like, no. Everybody knows I'm coming? Like,
nah, my agent was even like, man, do what you want to do. At the end of the day, you know, it's whatever you want to do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. So, and you know, it was my decision to come back and come work out.
Joe was saying he's thinking about his contract, and he's also thinking of you and Jamar during that process. What does it mean to have a quarterback who looks at this that way?
Man, it means a lot. You know, just having a guy, a leader like him, you know, looking out for guys like us, and you know, hopefully we can get something done.
Did you buy any of the weird trade stuff before the combine that was out there? I'm sure you saw it.
I seen it, but I wasn't tripping. I know I'm wanted here at the end of the day, and I knew I wasn't going nowhere. So.
I don't think I've seen Duke shoot down a trade like rumor more than he did with you.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see. That made me feel, you know, more wanted here, and felt good. So,
at one point, it went viral that your deal was done. Did you get bombarded by people saying, "All right"?
Yeah, I had a lot of people texting me, man, but I ain't texting back because I knew it was nothing done. You know what I'm saying? So, my mom texted me, was like, "You got a deal done, son?" And it's like, "Mom, trust me. If I had a deal done, you would be first to know." She was like, "I thought so." But yeah, man, it was just, you know, just rumors.
Here's hoping those rumors become fact before the start of the season. The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by AltaFiber, future-proof fiber internet capable of delivering multi-gigabit speeds designed to take your home, business, and community to a new level. Elevate your connection with AltaFiber. And by Paycor. More than 29,000 customers trust Paycor to help them recruit, pay, engage, and retain employees. Learn more at paycor.com. Now, time for a conversation I hope you enjoy as much as I did. It's been almost exactly 2 months since the Bengals stunned the NFL by signing the best free agent offensive lineman on the market to a 4-year contract, 4-time Pro Bowler Orlando Brown Jr. When Brown met with the media shortly after signing on the dotted line, he mentioned how he has studied the all-time great left tackles in his quest to get better, including Bengals Hall of Famer Anthony Munoz. That gave me an idea. What if I could arrange for the two of them to talk football on a Zoom call? That call took place this week, and we have the pleasure of listening in. I'm going to start this conversation by pulling the curtain back a little bit. Orlando, when I mentioned the possibility of joining me on this podcast with Anthony Munoz, you lit up like a Christmas tree. How much do you know about Anthony, and why is this so meaningful for you?
Yeah, man. I mean, I know a lot, you know, obviously just probably more surface level stuff, but it means so much to me, man, just because of, you know, everything that, you know, my family instilled in me about the left tackle position. And, you know, Anthony Munoz is the greatest to do it. And I think statistically that's proven. What he's done on the film shows it, his gold jacket. And, you know, man, given the opportunity to be able to speak to him, I mean, come on, it's no denying that I was, I've been waiting on this moment.
Anthony, Orlando was born in 1996, a few years after your career ended, but he clearly appreciates the greats that played before him. What does that tell you?
Well, you know, it's really meaningful. It's flattering that, you know, he would talk about wanting to meet me and wanting to talk. You know, I guess it really goes to the game. I mean, and I'm much older than him, much, much older. I was older than his dad. But then I look at the guys that, you know, the shoulders I stood on. You know, when I was a kid, I was watching, you know, Art Shell and guys like that. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's great to hear as generations go along that, you know, we can think about the guys that played the same position. And I'm flattered and I'm thrilled to get a chance to meet the young guy.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. I appreciate that, man. That's, you know, I personally feel like that's like the humbling part of football is the guys that came before you, you know, even at your university, on the pro teams you play in, you know, once you get to a certain level in this league, the guys that came before you, you know what I mean? That's who laid out the carpet to give guys an opportunity. And, you know, you being, you know, the type of player you were athletically, height-wise, size-wise, weight-wise, all of that, you know, you're somewhat one of the first. So, you know, man, I mean, it's a true honor.
Well, Orlando, you know, it's interesting. So many times we think about the pro game, but you mentioned a great thing, you know, the guys that came, you know, before us. And, you know, I look at, you know, you played at Oklahoma, I played at USC, two-story programs. And I look at the guys that really played before me there, you know, way back in the 60s with Ron Mix, Hall of Fame, number, you know, played a lot of years in the NFL. Ron Yeary, first pick of the draft for the Vikings. And then myself, and then guys after me like Bruce Matthews and Tony Basile, and you got the same thing going. So, you know, I think it's great that as, you know, young guys that are in the league, and even myself, we continue to keep that sense of history and understand and see and appreciate what, you know, what the left tackle, what linemen do. And that's what's fun for me to meet a young guy like yourself that's having a lot of success right now and to finally say, hey, I'm looking forward to, you know, hopefully they bring me back to the preseason because, you know, Dan knows I do the preseason games, and I'm sure you guys won't be playing a whole lot in the preseason. But week number one, I'll, you know, I'll be watching, and then when the games are at home, I'll be in the stands watching. But that's what's fun for me. And I tell people, you know, people ask me, what about the draft? What do you think about the draft? I said, you know what? It started for me with the big smile before the draft. The fact that we signed a left tackle, and that to me, you know, I know number nine, had a big smile, a lot of fans. But I tell you, this old offensive lineman had a big smile when they signed you.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, it was just, you know, coming to be a Bengal, man, it was a clear opportunity. And, you know, money aside, man, I'm all about winning, and I'm all about playing the left tackle position to the best of my abilities. And, you know, this was a system under Coach Taylor, Coach Frank Pollock, man, everything that they asked the offensive tackle to do within the system, I feel like was met my standards and kind of plays to my strengths as a player. And, you know, we've all got our own strengths and weaknesses. And, man, I just feel like what they had to offer in that area, obviously with Joe, you know, being at the helm at quarterback, I mean, that doesn't make it a tough decision either, man. But it all kind of came together. You know, but something I really wanted to ask you, though, was, you know, we all know your accolades, man. You know, 11-time Pro Bowler, All Pro, 13 years. How were you able to maintain elite consistency? You know, I haven't had the opportunity to make an All-Pro yet. I've made the last four Pro Bowls, the last three at left tackle. And, you know, I haven't necessarily done that yet. And that's my plan this year, you know, to be able to turn that corner and be that guy. But how were you able to maintain that level of consistency throughout your whole career?
Well, first of all, I think that's a great goal for you. I mean, the Pro Bowls are great. You know, you're one of six, I think, when you make the Pro Bowl. When you make All-Pro, you're one of two in the entire league. And, you know, so that's a great goal. For me, it was year-round, staying consistent, staying in shape, working on my technique. You know, one of the things a lot of people know is that I didn't take a whole lot of time, and this worked for me after my last game, to get back into training my body, letting it recover, you know, and going into it slowly. But I'd already achieved a high level of conditioning during the season, as you know. And you're banged up a little bit, but I continued right after the season, and I knew – that I would go out and I'd lift and I'd run, but I'd also work on my technique in the offseason. Mm-hmm. One of the things I tell young guys, you don't need someone across the line of scrimmage to work on your sets, on your steps. And I just drilled that. That was, you know, that was the way I taught. And I know you got an excellent offensive line coach in Frank Pollock. That's all about the technique. So, and I had the attitude that, you know, I was a number three pick. I came in, I started on the third day, but I approached every season that I had to earn the job again. I wasn't taking it for granted. You know, after that first year of starting and the second you're making the Pro Bowl and all, I erased that and said, okay, as I enter my off season, I have to go back and earn a job. And that was my whole mentality, is that I wanted to work. I wanted to step the volume up in my preparation, get much better in my technique, get in better shape, get stronger. And that's the approach I took. And up until my last year, I was probably going into my year 13, I was a little more banged up, but I was probably in the best shape cardiovascular, because I knew as an older player, you had the younger guys nipping at your heels. So, And just to share this one story, I'll never forget. We had running tests going into mini camps, or, you know, you call them OTAs. And we had a defensive lineman, Tim Crumrine, who trained like crazy too.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to do a half mile and a mile. And, you know, we had like 8.5 minutes. And I looked at Tim and I said, there's no way we're going to take the full 8.5. And we busted out, and all the young guys said, what are you guys doing? Well, first of all, we wanted to really, by example, show them the work ethic. But then on the other hand, I needed to show the coaches that I could still make that half mile, that mile under a certain amount of time. So I think that's the example that especially offensive linemen set for not only other linemen, but for the team, is that, you know, as you know, we don't get all the notoriety, but we can set the pace, the tempo about how we prepare, how we work. And that's how I was trained at USC. And that was really the approach I took until year 13.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that, you know, wholeheartedly, man. I, you know, that's somewhat, you know, I don't want to say a forgotten or untold part of the game, but it's one of the most important. You know, I think a lot of times, man, being in it now, you know, being in the sport so often, you know, for me, and I don't know how it was for you, but, you know, you see a lot of guys that are talented that don't necessarily love the game. And, you know, they kind of lose out on their abilities to be able to maximize and, you know, what they can be and who they can be as players. And, you know, that was something, man, that I always heard early on was, you know, how important your work ethic was and training all those different things. I it's something that I've personally gotten better with throughout my career, just because, you know, immaturities or whatever reasons coming out. You know, I've always was a hard worker. That's how I earned my job but in college. But, you know, man, it's crazy you say that. I remember, you know, quick little story for me. I remember, man, I want to say it's right around in July of 2015. I think you did a TED talk or something like that.
Yeah, man.
It was. You talked about moving forward. You know, your mom, you know, encouraging you to move forward, and you know, that was something that really hit home with me. You know, because it was just such a deep message. You know, as somebody obviously that looks up to you, even then, you know, more so now, being in this position. But you know, man, that's something that I've kind of always went back to in my mind was, you know, the mindset and mentality of that.
Yeah. You know, I think as we talk about that, you know, one of the phrases that I get a little, I don't really care for. I know a lot of guys talk about a chip on their shoulder. I don't believe in that, because to me, when you look at it, that you have a chip on a shoulder, that has a tendency to take your focus away from your job. If you look at it that this is just a job I have, and I'm going to make those people, the Brown family or whoever, you know, make them believe they made the right choice. That's it. I could have gone into my draft and said, you know, I got a chip on my shoulder because nobody said I'd get drafted. I missed, but I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it, this is my opportunity. This is my job. I want to keep this job as long as I can at the highest level. And I really believe if you start talking about a chip on your shoulder, and I've heard other guys use that, that it really takes your focus off what you have to do. And it puts your focus on those that you want to say, hey, look at what I can do, more than like, I got to do my job. And this is what I'm going to do to help the team to be the best. First of all, the best player, the best team player. And and I'll share this real quick. You know, we know this is a team sport. And when I share a lot, I say the only time I was selfish in this team sport was in the off season. I was selfish to get myself as strong as possible, in the best shape, and work on my technique. That's the only time I was selfish. Once I hit the field with my teammates, it was all about team. And that's the approach I took, and I think that's what allowed me to play at such a high level for such a long time.
Yeah, man, I love that, man. I've always been curious, you know, obviously just watching so much film of you and knowing your story. And, you know, this might be a little deep, but, you know, talk to me a little bit about, like, your mindset, your standard come Sundays. You know, and obviously that preparation starts, as you're saying, in the off season, in training camp, with the guys, blood, sweat, and tears, you know, the whole spiel. But, you know, talk to me a little bit about, like, your state of mind on Sundays.
Yeah. Well, okay, so first of all, you have 3 or 4 days of practice before your game. I always looked at that as my preparation. That was getting ready for my final exam. You have however many plays on Sunday, but think about all the reps you have leading up to Sunday. Reps to work on what, once you've studied the guy you're playing against, what am I going to use against him? What's going to work? And then working on that all week and believing in that. So I enjoyed all the reps that I took during the week. If it was, you know, a thud or full speed for us, or even a walkthrough, I believe you can get better in a walkthrough. You know, absolutely. If you're past that, don't just get out of your stance. Do what you do in, you know, in full speed, but you're not hitting anybody. Not that you have to, you know, blow everything out in a walkthrough, but you can get better in a walkthrough. So that was my whole mindset. And then come Saturday, we review, and I'll never forget, Jim McNally, who coached me, was along the lines of Frank Clark. Jim would come up to me, and he goes, now you've worked on this. You got to believe in it and trust it. And I said, yep, here's the technique that I believe is going to work. And you go with it. And that was my whole mindset. And I think a lot of the mindset goes back to my freshman year in college. And it's interesting. I retired, and a year after we retired, we moved. We built another house and we moved. I found my freshman playbook from USC. I mean, you're talking 17 years after my freshman year. And I opened it up, and the first page, and this is kind of the attitude I had. The first page, all it said in block letters was dominate. And then you turn the second page and it says, we will dominate from the first play, and by the fourth quarter, they will give in. And that's kind of, you know, with our whole mindset was finish, 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 and just setting the once you get in and you believe and you trust what you're going to do. Now the guy across from you, after the first several plays, you want him saying, oh, this is going to be a long afternoon. This is
no doubt.
And that was the whole, and it might not, you know, we all get beat. We've all gotten beat, but to keep it to a minimum, but have him believe that it's going to be a long afternoon. That's kind of how I built up to when I played on Sunday.
Yeah, no, man, I feel like that definitely showed. You know, I can't tell you how many games I watched, but man, I mean, you had so many battles, you know, obviously with, I mean, some of the best that ever played a game, like Bruce Smith, man, LT, I think you caught him a little bit in there. I remember watching some stuff on him, but man, I mean, just your approach and, you know, sometimes, you know, as you said, man, you know, you will get beat, but I think, man, the one thing you really had about your game that was crazy was your recovery. You know what I mean? It's like, man, a guy may look like he has the edge, but somehow, some way, you got your feet and hips back in front of this guy and boomer size. You know what I mean? It's insane, you know what I mean, how you were able to do those type of things, man. Are those, for you, were those considered like practice techniques? Was that more of a mindset for you? You know, obviously, because, man, I personally, you know, I understand that if I'm setting a D in and I'm using my inside hand and I feel his shoulder come to me and I can't post back, I'm trained to spin. Yeah. You know what I mean? I've trained my muscle memory to, I'm going to spin here. If I miss with my inside hand and I know he spins inside, I'm spinning with the spinner, you know, and I see you do that sometimes, whether you're playing a Bruce Smith and, you know, maybe you miss with the first punch and, you know, you feel like he's got an edge, but somehow you get back in front of him. You know what I mean? Is that a trained habit? Is that, you know, just similar for you, muscle memory? Like,
if
how does that work for you?
Trained. I mean, it's all the above. It's stuff that you just got to keep going and do whatever it is, you know. And I would think because they put us at left tackle that they believe we're athletic enough to move out in space. And that's the approach I took. If I did get in that position, you know, one of the things I would do, you know, God blessed me with the, you know, big rear end. So why not, you know, I played basketball in high school. I couldn't jump, but I got a lot of rebounds because I used my body and I knew where the ball was going. So I used my posterior end. So why not? Yeah. If you feel you kind of, you know, turn, spin, and then recover. But that's the whole thing we worked on, and I was thankful that I had that ability to recover, the recoverability. But it's, again, when you talk about that, what does it boil down to? Attitude. Attitude of regardless of what position you're in, you got to finish the block. You got to finish it however you can.
I love that, dog. I love that, man. You know, who would you say is the best defensive end you played throughout your career?
Probably the best all around you mentioned, Bruce Smith. I mean, I could go down the line, probably give you 10 guys that amazing, but the total package was probably Bruce Smith. I mean, size, speed, length, you know, smarts. And it was obvious because they could talk him over the nose and he could play inside with his size just as effective. But, you know, I think there's about a half dozen guys I played my career that are in the Hall of Fame. So, you know.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so.
No doubt.
I caught guys early in their career like Bruce. And then I caught guys late in their career like Elvin Bethea with the Oilers and Cedric Hart.
Oh, yeah.
You know, guys like that. And then there's some guys that don't get enough credit. Like, you know, you had Howie Long on one side of the Raiders, but then you had Greg Townsend. The guy was amazing. Yeah. So, you know, Clyde Simmons and, you know, Sean Jones and Fred Dean. Oh, yeah. Leroy Selman. I saw Leroy Selman twice in the first 5 weeks of my rookie year. And I'm thinking, holy smokes, welcome to the NFL, you know?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Probably one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. but one of the toughest competitors. He's probably in my top five. And I saw him twice, preseason and then opening up my rookie year. I'm thinking, okay, here we go, NFL, time to strap it up.
Oh, man, that's the best, though. And nothing like competing against greats. Something I did want to ask you, though, was, man, are there any regrets that you have in your career, whether that be, it's personal, you know what I mean? But just as far as with family, as far as with what happened on the field or, anything like that, obviously, because you're a Hall of Famer, and you were the greatest to ever do it at the position. And, I'm just curious, man, no one man is perfect. So,
Nobody is. Mm-hmm. But I can say that I was taught, I had a lot of great mentors. I was taught to prioritize things. And like I said, my workout was, that was it. But, really deciding to prioritize my life with my wife, my kids, and my football. And I really believe the way I was taught, I was able to do that. I was able to put everything I could into football, but at the same time, I was able to really make my family a priority. So as far as regrets, maybe I didn't learn to pass rush and I couldn't rush Montana on that 92-yard drive when they beat us in the Super Bowl. That's the only regret, man. I wish I had the spin or up and under the swipe to get in there and maybe tackle them on third and long. We win the Super Bowl. But no, Orlando, I can really say that I really don't have any regrets as far as the game itself. I felt like I gave it everything when I could. I was, that was one of the things after, only playing one healthy season at USC, I wanted to play 10 plus years. And every time I put the uniform on, I wanted to be next to my guys. And I was able to do that for just about my entire 13 years with the Bengals.
Man, that's awesome, man. That's a beautiful thing, man. That's so cool. I also wanted to ask you too about, just some of your relationships with some of your left guards that you played next to, man. I know you didn't play next to many, I believe, as a Bengal. Yeah. But, I'm just curious on, your relationships with some of these guys. Just how far they are, are you still friends with them? How was it when you guys were playing? How much time was spent together? I'm just curious.
No, that's a great question. Yeah. And I tell people, unlike the game that, nowadays, when I tell people I played 13 years with the Bengals and had one line coach, they're like, what? And crazy. I played, and Dan might have the stats, but I think I played next to Bruce Reimers for like 7 or 8 years, maybe 6 or 7. I played next to Dave Lapham for 4, who we're still best of buds. I mean, Lapp
is the man.
He's my guy, man. I took Dave Lapham to my hometown in Southern California when they did all these things for me at home when I was getting inducted. And they said, we'd like for you to bring one teammate. And I could have chose a bunch of them, but I took Lapp. So I played my first 4 years next to Lapp and about maybe 6 or 7 next to Bruce Reimers. And, of course, he always stayed in Iowa. I've seen him a couple of times since they started bringing guys back. But I'm sure we get together and it's like we haven't missed a beat. And then a couple other guys, Bruce Kozerski, who played guard center, they're still in town. So we still have a lot of the guys that I played with. And really, the only guys, Bruce Reimer, stayed in Iowa, so I don't see him a whole lot. But we communicate now and then. And it was amazing because, as you know, I mean, that left guard, it means everything. Not only that,
absolutely,
especially that left guard. And to be able to play next to two guys for the majority of my career, I feel really blessed and fortunate to be able to do that.
Man, I hear you, man. Because I just coming off a Super Bowl with Joe Tooney out there in KC, and we spent the last 2 years together. Before that, for me, it was Marshall Yanda in Baltimore on the right side a little bit. Man, just that bond that's created, when you're a battle with that guy for a whole game, and it's just you two versus another two set of men whose families and loyalty and all this stuff is on the line. And, just that bond and relationship that's created with them in battle, man. I'm just always curious, just about the, transition of the game and kind of how that goes.
That's great. Now I got a young left tackle, young left guard. We can see you and Volsa next to each other for 8, 9, 10 years. So,
that's the plan. That's the plan, man.
Number 9 there for about another, 10, 15, and have you guys on the left side, and, we're fine.
No doubt, man. Last question for you. I don't think we got much time, but last question for you, man. like I did a little bit dive into you a little bit, you know, obviously like growing up and stuff. And, you know, I just was always curious, you know, being a Mexican American, you know, man, just kind of like what you experienced. Cause you're, you know, growing up in California, I'm guessing, you know, during the '70s, man, it had to, or, you know, late '60s and seventies had to be, you know, somewhat different. So, you know, I just was curious on the type of culture and people you grew up around.
You know, I had a great upbringing. I lived in a really diverse area. And you're right, yeah. 60s and 70s out in L.A. were not the greatest. But I lived in a part just east of L.A., about 40 miles. And, I mean, there was three of us. We were like the three musketeers, and we'd go to each other's house. I had a white guy, a black guy, and a brown guy. The three of us, man, we played baseball together. And I think I'd have to say, a little biased, they probably enjoyed my mom's homemade tortillas more than the other food. But you know, we used to go to each other's house, eat, you know, have meals with each other. We used to hang out. So it was pretty diverse. And my high school was pretty diverse. So I was fortunate growing up. You know, my whole family's from Mexico. I was born in the States, but, you know, always been proud of the culture and trying to represent, you know, the Latino, you know, community. And it's been important because I hear a lot of feedback, you know, because especially as you get more, you know, the Latinos playing in the NFL, guys, you know, watching you and stuff as they're growing up. But yeah, so the culture was pretty cool. I had a great upbringing. You know, it wasn't the best, you know, we didn't have a whole lot, but it didn't matter because as long as I had, you know, my family and school and sports, I was set, man. It's just the summertime, I played baseball all summer. You know, then I got to high school and started playing some football along with baseball and basketball. But things went pretty well. I never experienced any pushback, anything that, you know, affected me, you know, as far as, you know, people really, you know, being any different to me. So it was good that I grew up where I did. And then I came back here. It was a little different when I got to Cincinnati. Couldn't find any Mexican food, you know.
No doubt.
A lot of people are going crazy about Taco Bell, and there's a restaurant here, Dan. You probably, I don't know if Dan's even old, but Chi-Chi's. They had a restaurant called Chi-Chi's.
Oh, yeah. I remember Chi-Chi's from back in the day. Absolutely.
Orlando, you like this since you asked me a question. The first mistake I made when I got to Cincinnati, one of my first interviews, because we looked all over for Mexican food, I said, one of the only things I love, as soon as we got to Cincinnati, I fell in love with Cincinnati. I mean, it was, same. But I in the interview, I said, I have one problem. I can't find any good salsa. And I can't. And so that was a mistake because after that article came out, every restaurant I went into, the cook came out with salsa. It was Japanese steakhouse. It didn't Italian. They came out with salsa. Here, try this. You know, you got to smile. Okay. But, you know, as time went by, we got some pretty good Mexican food. But, yeah, so it was, I enjoyed growing up in my culture and you know, really had no problems with it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's, you know, it's crazy you talk about Cincinnati. That's like the best part of being here, man, is the love in the city. You know what I mean? It's you know, you know how much they love their football. You know how important it is to them. And, you know, that same energy is reciprocated, man, from within and myself and yourself. So, man, I'm so thankful for, you know, you taking some time to talk to me and everything, man. I really appreciate you.
Love it. When Dan contacted me and asked, I said, I'd love to do this. I want to meet the guy. Yeah. You know, now I know I'll be, you know, rooting, even if I hadn't met you, I'd be rooting you on. But I don't get down there a whole lot until camp. But I'll pop my head in there now and then, be the preseason. If they ask me back to do the broadcast, I'll be back. But I'll watch you. I'll be watching you, and hopefully we can go out and grab a bite to eat down the road here when you have some time.
Yes, sir, man. I'd love to. I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. And Dan, thank you for setting this up. Yeah. Dan has all my information. You can pass it on to you, my cell, my email and stuff, and maybe we can connect down the road here.
Okay, perfect, man. Dan, I really appreciate you, dog. Thank you.
Hey, this has been great. I feel like I was a fly on the wall when a friendship was formed.
Right. No doubt.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for your time. I know the listeners will really enjoy this conversation. Look forward to seeing you two guys together during training camp at some point when Anthony's on the field.
That'll be great. Sir. Dan, thank you. Orlando, pleasure, man. Great talking to you.
Yes, sir. Pleasure as well. Thank you.
How cool was it to hear Orlando's genuine excitement in getting the opportunity to talk to one of his football heroes, Anthony Munoz? That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Kettering Health, the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. by Bengals Picks and Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play with tickets and signed merchandise up for grabs, by Paycor, the official HR software provider of the Bengals, and by AltaFiber, future-proof fiber internet. Elevate your connection with AltaFiber. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.